Hi, I'm Esther.
And I'm Sean.
I write about AI news here at Tech Target in Massachusetts.
And I edit Esther's stories.
We're here to talk with tech experts about everything AI and ChatGPT.
Don't forget Google Gemini.
Whether it's who's ahead in the generative AI race, the metaverse, digital twins, or even the latest in autonomous vehicles, we've got it covered. Right, Sean?
Yep, we've got it covered.
Hello, everyone. Sean and I are back today with another episode of the Targeting AI podcast. Today, we are speaking with co-founder and CEO of AI hardware and software vendor Sembinova Systems, Rodrigo Leung. Before becoming a CEO of Sembinova, Rodrigo was a senior vice president of Oracle, where he worked on microelectronics, microprocessor, and ASIC development. Before then, he was vice president at Sun Microsystems and was director of engineering at two tech companies. Thank you for joining us today on our podcast, Rodrigo.
Thank you for having me.
I have the first question. So, Rodrigo, Sembinova, you're an independent vendor, but you pride yourself on providing the full AI software stack. You're valued at more than $5 billion. So when you look back at the founding of your company and the specific problems you were looking to address, what were those issues that you were looking to address? Have you made progress toward those goals? And what kind of customers were you looking to capture originally? And what does your customer base look like now?
No, this is a really important question. Really, thank you for having us talking about kind of what the industry looks like and where Sembinova fits. And so when we started the company, what was very clear was that these AI models were going to get bigger and bigger. And be incredibly capable for a broad range of things. But what was also becoming very, very clear was that it was a technology that was supposed to be available for everybody, but not everybody had the technical skills or the data sets or the hardware expertise to be able to actually build their own, right? And so you're starting to see this becoming a divide in the market where the haves and have-nots when it comes to skills to be able to deploy AI, the skills to be able to build models, the skills to be able to train the right type of model. That's becoming a market where some people have a lot of expertise and ability to do it, and some people do not, and they're not sure exactly how to go forward. And so we came together, my two co-founders who are professors at Stanford, who are doing research around the technology stack, and really thought about how do we actually take something that's ultimately really, really complex, right? That requires a lot of skills, both in terms of hardware, software, model, AI modeling, machine learning, all of that. How do we make it available to everybody, right? How do we make it available to a much broader set of people than what we were seeing at the market back in 2016, 2017? And that's how Sembinova came together. We're full stack, as you mentioned. And when I say full stack, I mean Sembinova, we build our own chips, we build our own hardware, build our own servers. We put all the software integrated and we pre-train these models based on open source models on behalf of our clients. And your question, your second part of the question, well, who's your customer base? And so Sembinova, we're purely B2B. Well, we're going into enterprise environments where the data security concerns, your data privacy concerns, your accuracy of the model results, you know, the hallucinations that you hear about in the market, the accuracy of the results have a much, much higher standard. And so we go into these environments, mission critical environments, where data privacy, data security, data accuracy is really important, and we give them enterprise grade solutions. And that's really who we serve. You know, think about the Fortune 500, the Global 2000, the large public sector organizations where you have a lot of private data. You are uncomfortable uploading that onto a public model, right? You want to maintain control of the data and where it goes in the world of AI. We bring the entire platform to them. Right? We bring all the hardware, all the software, all the models. We bring it to you. You train it in private. You use it, you do inferencing in private, you do it all in private so that you can get the benefits of AI without having you to, you know, one, expose your data to the public, right, or to a shared model, and then two, to be able to actually have much of the technology already done by someone else, so you don't have to rev up hundreds and hundreds of people inside to be able to create an AI practice.
Like, it seems like you're for those who perhaps don't have the bandwidth to do everything separately, right? Rodrigo, I just wanted to clarify that.
Well, it's for those who are doing the bandwidth, they don't want to use their investments in that way, right? That you think about what are the three constraints that you see today? You see it in the hardware side, right? And some people are trying to build their own chips to figure out how to solve the hardware shortage problems. The second one is in the machine learning. So what models, how do we build these models that are accurate enough for me to power my business, right? So how do I get a trillion parameter model, for example? How do I do that, right? And so a lot of people are struggling with that. And then third, ultimately, is a resource issue. How do I find enough machine learning experts to be able to actually run a business that is powered by AI? And that's, you know, that transition that the world's seeing, that's pre-AI to post has happened, is going to touch every company in the world, is going to touch every industry on this planet. And so everyone's worrying about those three things, right? Where do I get the hardware? Where do I get the models? And how do I actually build a team to power it? And so with Samanova, we can actually give you a hot start. We give you all the hardware already included. We optimize it. We give you the models, a trillion parameter model. We actually give that to you as something that you can own in perpetuity. And then we give you a lot of that already tuned on the hardware software for our customers so that you do not have to go and hire all of these people, which are hard to find anyway, but hire all these people. You can focus on hiring people to run your business.
Rodrigo, one thing I want to clarify really quickly. Are you targeting at all the research and scientific market as well as enterprise? Is enterprise like most of your focus and some on research?
We're very well used in the research environment as well as we've talked about in the market. Is we've got some amazing partners in folks like Argonne National Labs and Lawrence Livermore National Labs doing some amazing research that's all tied around AI, both in terms of healthcare and looking at the universe, in terms of science, and in terms of material discovery. All of these things are in the science, and I think machine learning is one of those technologies that will be pervasive across a broad range of things. Of recent, because of the popularity of ChatGPT and how people want to use AI in the world of text and language, we've been very, very active in the commercial side of the world, building people's own private GPT, right?
The first time I ever heard of you was about six years ago at a conference at the Argonne National Laboratory. It was in Chicago. It was sponsored by, it was a supercomputing conference.
Right.
You were there and there was a little buzz about your latest chips. And that's when I first heard about you.
Yeah, Argonne's been a great partner over 6 years. In fact, it's right. You're spot on. It's right around 6 years. We have our 6 year birthday anniversary next week, and we're really excited about that. And so we've done multiple generations of hardware, many generations of software releases over that 6 year window. But it's all in very, very close collaboration with our partners, right? Which include the folks at Argonne National Labs, we're very proud of the collaborations we've done with them and on a broad range of things, and being able to then take some of those learnings that we've had over the years and continue to improve our product, our hardware, our software, our models for a much broader market as well. And so today we play in three different continents. We play both in the research side and as well as in the commercial side. And we do across a broad range of things from language to vision to scientific models, that really powered the largest organizations in the world.
You kind of spoke a little bit about it, but I would like you to go a little bit more in depth about like what differentiates you, right? You have this big AI hardware market out there, which a lot of people say NVIDIA is dominating, right? So how do you compete in that market, and how do you, I guess, continue to differentiate yourself?
Right. I think you have to look at the individual pieces and look at them when integrated together, right? That on the hardware side, What we built at Sambonova is our chip unit is called the Reconfigurable Data Flow Unit. The Reconfigurable Data Flow is a very, very important aspect of our technology stack. Why? Because AI by nature is data flow. Now, if you really think about kind of what AI is trying to do, it's trying to move a lot of data through a system and trying to process it as efficiently as possible. And so when you actually have models that we all see growing, right, growing at a very, very fast pace. When I started the company, we hadn't even gone to a 1 billion parameter model yet. Right. If you remember, we're dealing with BERT models back then, even LSTM models, even smaller, right? And so we're dealing with very small models at the time. In a short five-year period, we're talking about 1.5 trillion, 2 trillion parameter models, right? And you look at kind of, I don't know what the CAGR is for that, parameter growth, right? But it's growing exponentially. And then you look at the amount of data that's being used to train these models, also growing exponentially. And so you got now these two dimensions that are growing exponentially. And the only way to do it today with a traditional legacy platform is to brute force it. Right? You brute force it, you just get more hardware, you just pound it in there and just kind of get more cycles in there, which is not sustainable in our view, right? You're finding shortages. You have chip shortage. You have expertise shortage. I mean, let's talk about power, energy, and cost. All those things come with it. But this kind of just brute forcing a way to it, I'm not exactly sure how the lines will converge, right? That the model's growing, data sets are growing, and you're just running into this constraint around what hardware and software are necessary in order to actually train them. And so with our technology, what we're looking at is being able to actually take the larger and larger models and really collapse the footprint of those, right? Really collapse the number of chips required in order to do this. And data flow is a big part of it. And that allows you to actually take these very, very large models, be able to actually host them in a much smaller number of devices, because we can keep all those models live and we can keep all of those models active while the user is waiting to interact with it, right?
Wait, so are you saying that's what differentiates you from NVIDIA? I mean, because I think we need to address this thing with they're the huge gorilla in the market, and you're a strong independent. But how do you go up against NVIDIA on sales calls, on getting new customers? What's your strategy?
Yeah, well, the interesting thing is we rarely do kind of go straight up with NVIDIA. NVIDIA's done a great job, and NVIDIA is going to be the solution that many people are looking at hardware are going to go use. But there are a set of applications, right, where your models are big. If your models are big and you actually require a certain type of efficiency in actually being produced results, right, we're uniquely able to do that. So when in the world of language, it's very large models. So as you get into these trillion, 2 trillion, 5 trillion parameter models, where you're scaling on hardware is becoming frankly, just very difficult to manage, because you need thousands of these things coming together in order to operate. We can collapse the footprint because the architecture of our hardware for very large models will be very differentiated, right? And so you're going to because it's data flow versus a graphics type of architecture, you're going to be able to actually take the footprint of hardware required and reduce it by a lot. If you actually have high-res imaging, instead of having these models that are being trained with 5K by 5K pixels, which is roughly what our iPhone, what our phones can take, if you're thinking about like enterprise class images, satellite imaging, medical imaging, right? And these things where the models are getting very, very big, again, we're able to actually train those types of models at a significantly smaller footprint. In many cases, we can train models that you just can't train on NVIDIA GPUs at all, right? That you cannot train them raw. And so you have to end up start chopping the images into these little puzzle pieces and then try to figure out what each of those puzzle pieces do and then try to put them back together. And that's not what we do. What we do is we take these models intact in the original resolution and then train them as is. And so as you get into this world where for enterprise, these models get bigger, the images get bigger. The types of things that you want to do in these multi-model world, multimodal world is getting complex. That our platform allows you to do things that you want, either can't do on the NVIDIA GPUs at all, or two, it will be significantly more expensive, significantly larger footprint in order to do those things, where it becomes impractical for most businesses to do, right? And so what we try to focus on is how do we actually create a hardware platform that allows these companies to take these hard problems where the models are really, really big and deploy them in a reasonable way.
So I just want to follow up because you're talking about being able to have all of this within one space, right? One thing that I'm wondering is how do you manage it to prevent the kind of mistakes? Because you mentioned a little bit hallucinations and all the mistakes that we know that comes about with AI. So because everything is like a package and one, how do you manage it, especially for your customers who they're not managing it, right? They don't have the resources or they don't want to manage it. So how do you exactly manage all of that?
Right. So if you think about some of these largest models that exist in the world, and probably you know, today you hear about these trillion, 2 trillion, 3 trillion parameter models that people are using and chatting to and creating, you know, AI results from. You ask, well, why can't every company just build their own? Right? If you think about kind of, well, why is it hallucinating? Well, it's really hard for you to actually take a model that's been publicly generated that doesn't have access to your private data to respond on a very private topic. I'll give you an example. You know, most companies, when they're dealing with customer calls, for example, right? A customer calls, they're unhappy about a product they purchased or some interaction that they have, right? Most reps aren't going on Google and actually researching that customer's issues on Google, because that's publicly trained. The information you want for that customer on the product that company sold are not available on the web for you to actually properly respond to the customer. So there's an internal private database that tells you what the customer bought, who the customer was, what the issues were, all of those things. And so we now starting to see that in business, you have a parallel with AI, right? Where the public generated models off of a public data will know public things. Right. If you have a private business trying to respond to customers on private information that the company has on very specific things that the customers have shared with you, you need a model that actually understands that private data. And today, those things aren't mixing. Right. They're not mixing. And so why is it that I think you're going to have a place where these public trained models are going to be very important, because they give you that interaction. But many, many businesses are starting to realize, wait a minute. I need to train these models with my private data because I need them to understand my customers, my products, my people, my services, my business. I need to understand that. But in many, many industries, companies aren't that comfortable disclosing that into a public domain, right? And so what we do at Sambanova is coming in with, so if you can't take your data over to the AI models in the cloud, what we're trying to do is bring the AI to you. Right. And because we have a hardware stack that collapses the footprint, that allows us to practically move the infrastructure required to train and deploy these models over to the customer where they are in a footprint that's manageable. Right. That is not these racks and racks and racks of systems for you to do this, that we can do it in a reasonable footprint and bring those types of models to you. Once you start training in private data, what you're starting to see is a much, much higher accuracy in the result, much less hallucination. Now, it's not zero, right? Because the model has to continue to improve. But what you see when you're training on private data, when you're training on the things that matter to you in your business, the questions that you're asking the model are much more aligned with the results you get, because it interprets the context of your questions significantly better.
Okay, so Rodrigo, you have you're known for your data scale system, and you recently launched a new chip, the SN4040L, I think.
Correct.
And so, is that built specifically for your large language models? And how does it work? And your platform, Sambanova Suite, it's your LLM platform, I think. How does the new chip work with that platform?
So SN40L is our fourth generation processor in this company. And so what we did here was building off of what we've had over the multiple generations of architecture on reconfigurable data flow, right? What we decided to do here is thinking about what are the issues that people have when deploying, training, fine-tuning, and deploying very, very large language models. And that's what the L is for LLM, that how do we actually create a full stack, including the chip? Let's get all the way down to the transistor. Right, because as you know, the benefits you get in actually putting features in the transistor gives you orders of magnitude improvement if you do it in the right way. And so we created SM40L with LLMs in mind. And what it allows us to do now is, one, we already had the advantages of being able to train because we're able to actually take, as I discussed, a very large footprint and then collapse it into a much smaller footprint in order to train. But the issue that many companies have been having is, if you think about kind of when you want to chat to one of these models, the model has to be live waiting for you. But the human, we're not texting it constantly, right? We'll engage with it. We might take a 20-second pause. Maybe we'll read it. Maybe we're busy doing something else. But then when we get back to it, we expect the machine to respond immediately. Okay, and so if you think about kind of that immediate response that's required, that means that on the other side of it, the machine is live waiting for you, right? Even when you're not doing anything, you're, you know, cooking or whatever we're doing, right? The machine has to be live. And so what's happening is, you know, in a world where you have hardware shortage and you have this data center sprawl and all the issues around resources, much of the time when you're in inferencing these models, that it's waiting for the user to respond, but the response has to be very fast and so it has to remain live. Okay, so what we did on Samanova is now we're able to, on a single device, collapse many of these models and keep them all live at the same time while being able to actually respond at what you expect is the response time without having to actually have every single model and every single user have their own independent device being live, right? And this is ultimately what we believe is going to be necessary for you to actually take these models into production, because the human interaction with these AI models will not be all that scheduled, right? Like you're firing back constantly. That's not how we're going to interact. We're going to interact when we actually have the time. We ask some questions, but then we might take some time and we're going to go back and ask some questions that are going to be pertinent to my last ask. Right, and we don't want it to lose context. And so being able to create a system that allows that interaction to work in the way that human interaction with these models will behave is very, very important, ultimately what we've enabled now. And so that's number one, right? This ability to actually create a very efficient system to keep many, many of these sessions live, many of these models live, all at the same time and in the same device, right? That's one. The second thing that we now are able to do is, now that we're able to keep all these sessions live, right, for all these different people, one of the things that we're able to do now is also then think about this in terms of, well, what happens if it's not all different people from different companies asking? Well, what if it's all one set of people from one company who have a lot of questions about a lot of different things within the company? Think about, I have questions about HR and finance and legal and coding and, you know, company policies. And, you know, maybe I'm a multinational country. I had questions about Germany and Japan. And, right, think about all the different things that companies have data around. And we need to actually make it available for people. Right. So what we decided to do is that now that we know we can keep all these sessions alive, what if I actually create a composition of experts? A composition of all these models and make them all accessible to the users all at once. And that's what you see with SM40L. What we're enabling now is able to build a composition of experts using open source models. Today, many people use Llama 2, Meta's Llama 2 as a base. We take those models and we assemble it into a 1 to 5 trillion off of a single server. I mean, think about this. It's a 5 trillion parameter model off of a single 8-socket server. Right, you just cannot do this today with other, you know, five trillion parameter model off of a single 8-socket server. Right, and this is how you're able to take what's ultimately hundreds and hundreds of sockets of GPU, collapse it into a footprint that allows every company to own their own GPT.
I was going to say, very interesting, very much out of my wheelhouse of knowledge. But I guess one of my another question, you've kind of touched on this as we've been going along, right? You know, and you're very much aware, especially as it comes to your new language model platform, and as well as basically your old, I guess, strategy as a business, of some of the problems that comes with that's buzzing in a company and the industry right now when it comes to privacy, data infringement, and all of that. So one of them is data ownership, which you've touched on a little bit, and the ways that enterprises can protect their data. So as a vendor in this market, how possible is it for enterprises to completely protect their data? Is that responsibility based on you vendors, or is it enterprises themselves?
Well, I think what's going to happen is the way that data is being regulated today. So if you're in highly regulated environments, right, people want to make sure that you have all the policies around protecting clients' data, right? All the program, all the right policies to make sure that it doesn't leak, that it's used properly. If you're in Europe with GDPR, there's customer rights around my data and where it's used. The way that I think the world is going is the models will be an extension of the data, right? Because it is a representation. The data is ultimately what allows you to represent the model to do a set of things, right? And so a lot of businesses are now starting to realize, okay, well, I want to use AI and I want to actually use it in, get the capabilities of it. But as the corporation increases, the nuances of what you can share and what you can't share through, a 50,000 person company, it's actually hard to educate a 50,000 person company on exactly what's okay to put out there, what's not okay to put out there. Did you know that uploading to a public model, the data remains in the model forever? do you know that? Or even the questions you ask is also registered as something that you're interested in to the public forever, right? And so I think to educate people on the fact that it's what your interaction to the models are now public knowledge. That's something that not everybody in the world understands, and certainly not anything that people in companies understand. And so this is where we come in and say, look, the best way to do this as you're trying to educate a workforce on how AI models work is do it all in private, right? To do it all in private, because if it's good enough for your data, if you've gotten comfortable over the last 20, 30 years around data security, data privacy, all the, cybersecurity things that you've invested in, all of those things, if we move the model right next to your data, then you're protected in the same way. If you're taking the data and moving it somewhere else, right, then you have to go and redo what you've actually had to invest decades getting comfortable with, right? The simplest way is to actually bring the model next to your data, because if it's good enough for your data, it's good enough for your model. And that's something that, at least as an initial step, we're trying to really talk to companies about that fact that you've already invested decades protecting your data. And the model itself is just another version of summarizing your data into a piece of software, right? So if you can take that and leverage the fact that your data has already been protected, then put the model in the same ecosystem and you should be in a good position.
Okay, Rodrigo, you touched on the European data regulation. So there's an emerging consensus that there's some kind of a need for regulation of AI. And different people have taken different, Sam Altman went before Congress, and the administration is looking at it. So what's your stance on regulation like, and how is it possible for vendors like you to be compliant with regulation, internationally when you're dealing with so many different regions and geographies? Because obviously you're compliant with GDPR in Europe and the new AI regulation law. And then, so are you applying those same standards to your U.S. business and Asia?
Well, look, all companies are going to be watching these very, very closely, just as things evolve very fast. But it says a couple of things about the technology itself, right? And I put a lot of parallels between artificial intelligence and the internet, of 25 years ago, right? If you think about it, it's a transformative technology. It's a transformative technology that's going to touch everything that we do for decades to come. Right. And so people are rightfully trying to understand, well, what are all the great things that you can do with it? But also, what are some of the things that we need to be more watching closely, in the same way that we saw that with the internet? right? If you think, remember what kind of what people were talking about 25 years ago, they were worried about data being stolen, people being hacked, right? All of those things back 25 years ago were things that were front and center in people's minds, right? It was like, well, what happens if people get their ID stolen and they get into your bank account? Well, those things are happening today, and entire industries around cybersecurity have been born out of that effort to really protect protect the users, right? And so I think what you're seeing now is the initial stages of kind of that same type of thought process, that we understand the breadth of the impact that AI is going to have, right? We also probably understand the fact that it's a technology that's going to change the world, and there's no, like, we're not going to not do it. And we're going to have to think about how to actually get the most benefit out of it while mitigating the downsides that always comes with technology transitions. And so with Sumanova, we're obviously, you know, watching this very, very closely and working with a lot of our clients, because ultimately a lot of what you're seeing with the technology itself is really driven by the type of data you have. And so people are very concerned about, well, how are you training these models? What data are you using? And all of the things that kind of come with that. And so I think it's going to be an extension of that, that when people want to really understand what it is that is driving these models, because ultimately it's not, you know, it's not magic, right? It's basically a scientific tool that allows us to kind of be able to take a certain data set and be able to provide, you know, predictions off of that, which now it's gone to the level that it produces things that perhaps any one of us couldn't think ourselves, right? But the thing that I actually think about is always a balance for us culturally to think about how do we actually make sure that we are taking advantage of the fact that this is in front of us, and there are many, many things that we can use to solve that need to be solved, you know, especially in areas of healthcare and energy and things like that, while protecting us from those who want to use it in something that is not as good for society.
In that same line, obviously you compared this kind of new wave of generative AI to the start of the internet 25 years ago. So, and we have heard of a lot of talk, especially this year, about we need to make these systems more responsible. And what I'm kind of hearing from you is the idea of, like, we need to educate not only the talent within the enterprises, but also kind of educate, I guess, consumers as well. We have also seen the call for an AI pause. What are your thoughts on this? Should we pause AI? What is the responsibilities of vendors like Sumanova, who are at the forefront of this technology, putting systems out there, putting new technology out there?
Look, I don't think pause makes sense. I think, you know, you have to think about this in terms of the fact that technology is evolving. And I think how you actually make use of it is going to be really, really important. There are things that people are worried about when it comes to artificial intelligence. But think about kind of the fact that we live in a world where I think there are a lot of things that we're doing already that are incredibly inefficient, things that we've been trying to solve around healthcare, things that we're trying to solve around climate. All these things are like right in front of us if we can figure out how to actually coexist with these technology transitions. I think that the worries that people have are around the fact that there are some things that we're doing that we haven't quite caught up on exactly how do we manage that risk, right? But the benefits of what we see in a number of different industries is so significant that I think we just, as a society, need to think about how do we actually take this technology and then grow it in a way that's that allows us to feel comfortable with the transitions that it brings. But it's very akin to, again, the internet, when, you know, there was this concern about the fact that, look, you know, this is too transparent, it's going to change too many things too quickly. And yet today, 20 some years later, I think most people, I mean, your Wi-Fi goes down. What do we do, right? Your Wi-Fi goes down, and like we don't like, how do we operate? You know, and so I think it brought so many things into our lives that we couldn't have thought about before. And you think about kind of how it enabled entire economies to get created, enabled participation of a much broader audience into economies that were previously not blocked. I mean, before the internet, who would have thought that somebody in a garage, you know, could sell a global business by shipping things out of their garage, right? And I think similar things around the AI we haven't even quite gotten to yet. But I think it brings participation, it opens up doors just as much as kind of maybe we'll worry about these other things, it does actually create some opportunities and create new things that I think is going to help us in ways that we haven't even imagined yet.
I wanted to follow up because I figured what you're saying is it seems a lot of people are saying, well, generative AI could possibly, you know, with the AI argument, there's also the argument of taking away jobs, right? And it seems like you're saying, well, no, it's going to bring new opportunities. Do you think it'll also bring new jobs? Or how do you think that or is it still going to take away some of the jobs, so to speak?
I think you're going to find that some jobs will change for sure. But at the macro level, I view it as, let me put it this way. Today, you know, you have an economy where I think there are some jobs where I think are available to some, but really not available to many, whether that's because of education, whether that's because of skill set, whether it's because of whatever it is, right? You know, and so if you think about kind of what's happening with something as simple as language, right? These language models, the ability to take what you produce and dynamically generate in all the different languages around the world so that you can participate in discourse across the world. You can participate in kind of, you know, you can create things that weren't available to you before, right? You can participate in things that you didn't have the skill sets or the ability to participate before. And so, yeah, like the internet where you say, hey, you know, how does suddenly, you know, the entire economy around eBay being able to, you know, sell things out of my garage become something that so many people now just do, right? I don't understand the whole influencer market, but that seems to be another thing where, like, you know, if you have some good ideas, you can get on the internet, the influencer thing, right? I mean, that wasn't available before. And yet today, almost anybody, you have a good idea, you have some things you want to say, you can participate, right? And I think AI is going to do those things. It's going to lower the barrier to entry for more people across a broader range of things, then I think is going to eliminate jobs, right? Because I think you're going to be able to participate in things that maybe you didn't have the training for, maybe you didn't go and get your graduate degree for, right? Maybe you didn't have the language expertise for, maybe you didn't have all the time to be able to study kind of how the contracts and how the rules work, right? Well, these systems are going to allow you. The world I imagine is every single one of us will have our own personal assistant to help us do things that we don't know how to do, right? What we want to do still comes from, like, where do you want to go with it? Like, what do you want to do? Those are things that we will drive. How do I do it? I think all of us will have at our fingertips somebody that gives us some additional facilities to enable that, right? And this is why it's so important for us to actually make sure that the resources that we're that these models are providing are accurate, they're custom to people, people feel comfortable, it allows people to see and feel and touch it. Does it align with kind of what I believe in? Those are all the important things that we're working on to make sure that when people are starting to use these things, they know what the models, where the models came from. They know what it's trying to do, and you align with it.
Okay, so we're talking about AI ethics and regulation and all that stuff. Now, what about the perennial problem of AI bias? So how does SambaNova approach that with your systems, your integrated systems, and how do you help your customers prevent bias in the way they use their algorithms and their AI technology?
Right, exactly. And a really important question. Again, the biases ultimately come from models being trained on certain data sets, right? And so it depends on what data you used in order to actually describe what the model learned, right? And so if I expose a model to only German language, it will learn German, right? So ultimately it's about the data set. And what we like at SambaNova is we like full transparency in how these models are trained. By full transparency. And so when we deploy these trillion parameter models on behalf of our customers in order to have their own starting private GPT, we do several things. One, of course, we actually bring our own hardware, our own software, all integrated, so you don't have to do all that work. That's kind of a big advantage our customers get. They just don't want to understand kind of what the hardware looks like, what the software, how do I program all that. So we take care of that. But what we decided to do some of years ago was fully lean into open source, right? Every model we use at SambaNova is open source. Why? Because You want to open the model so that everybody at any given point in time can look at the entire model and how it was trained, right? I can look at all the data that was used. That should be all in the open source. I can see how the model was trained. I can then test that. And if I'm in a regulated environment, I can show to regulators how it was trained. Everything that you do from the beginning until you actually deploy it is all open and transparent. Now, we believe that ultimately that's going to be something that is going to be an entire industry of people to help you figure out and how to test these models to make sure that it's doing all the things that you want it to do. And so there are already companies out there trying to figure this out. But it starts with, is it open or closed? Right? In some places, these models are closed. They're like asking them for the weights of those models. It's like asking Coca-Cola for the recipe, right? It's like it's their IP, right? So at Samba Nova, we're fully committed to starting with open source. We think that when it comes to machine learning, it's a Linux moment for AI. These open source models are actually getting really, really good. And Meta's Llama 2 is very popular. You now see other companies across the world starting to produce really good open source models. And so you start there, and then there's always a team that's coming in and starting to review what was the data that was used to train that. And then what happens is you take those models, we take these open source models, we optimize for our hardware, and then we let our customers start fine-tuning that on their private data. Well, even then, we start logging all the data sets that were used to fine-tune that, because we know that 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, somebody might come back and say, wait a minute, how is that model modified over the years? Right? And is there a bias now towards, say, that generation versus this generation? I mean, think about it. I mean, right now we think about demographics of groups of people where the data, so there's been a lot of very public conversations about which subgroups data is represented, underrepresented, overrepresented, et cetera, et cetera. Think about generational, right? If I trained a model today and I did not update that model 10 years from now, that model is now biased around the population of people that exist today, not 10 years later, right? And so we have this idea of continuous fine-tuning. You always have to get more current data in it so you don't get stale or biased even by time, right? That it's aged. Your model's aged and only knows about this. And so you have to constantly fine-tune and then get the model to be more representative of whoever you're supposed to represent. But I don't think there's any way you can say, hey, there's one model that fits everybody. I think the best we believe that we should be able to do is make it transparent to everybody, make it so that you can see it, and then you're able to then judge for yourself, right? Exactly what is the model trying to do. And I think there are going to be companies coming in to help you build additional tools to get better sense of how these models were trained.
Generative AI has obviously been a very big hype this year. How do you think it's going to continue to change and evolve? And do you think this race that we are seeing in the generative AI race, is it worth winning?
Well, I mean, I think what you're seeing with generative AI is a very powerful use case in the broader sense of AI, right? That I think what's, think about like some of the very, very great use cases that existed even before Gen AI showed up. I mean, generative AI is around being able to generate content, right? And can you write me a Jay-Z style rap about something, right? I mean, that's kind of like when it first came out last year, several people sent me Samba Nova style raps, and so it's you can feel it, right? You can generate content that didn't exist before, right? And so I think it's a very powerful way to do it, and there are already really powerful ways of actually using AI. Think about like the image recognition stuff, right? Where you can actually draw boundaries around a human for car detection. Well, I can also use that for medical imaging and. Can you put a circle around cancer cells, for example, right? And so think about the power that AI already have, even before generative. That's more of a segmentation issue, what we call segmentation. Can you outline things that you're looking for, or can you classify certain things? And so it's a very, very powerful, generative AI is a very, very powerful class of artificial intelligence applications in a much broader sense of AI, as far as kind of what technologies can really help us with, and so I think what you're seeing is just one part of it, which is really around language, right? Language, text, right? Now you can start thinking about, well, what happens when the voices come in? You're starting to see that with, you know, ChatGPT and things like that, you know, being able to start doing voices. And then now you have video streams and how you deal with that. And then you have, you know, all these multimodal things coming in where you're actually trying to do not just one type of model, but you're mixing them with, you know, various different type of models. And so I do think that directionally, we're moving towards a place where, like I said, everybody should have access to their own personal assistant, one that you feel comfortable with, one that is actually trained in kind of what you want it to look like, biased, if you want to call it, like, biased in the way that you want it to be biased, right? Around like what you like, what you want to do every day, what your lifestyle is like, maybe what your job or whatever. I mean, all of us, you know, it's called customization, right? And so even our websites today are very customized, you know, what we clicked on and what we look at, you know. And so I think you're going to see AI models move towards that place where is serving the primary user, right? Serving the primary user in the way that they live and being assistant to them. And that could be, whether that's personal, professional, it's going to be something that each one of us will have something at our fingertips that allows us to do what we want to do.
Okay, one last big issue question before Esther wraps it up, the chip shortage. So most of the most advanced AI chips come from Taiwan. And so there could be a geopolitical conflict in that corner of the world that could exacerbate that. There's other conflicts going on around the world. So are you concerned about obtaining the raw materials for chips, themselves, and new regulations on China from the White House, whether that affects you also?
Most major suppliers in the AI chip space are building their chips out of TSMC, in Taiwan. And you've seen some of this stuff, and I know you all covered some of it as well, right? That over the last couple of years has been a big topic about, you know, how do we manage that? And obviously, we're watching this very, very closely as well, right? But there's no doubt. I mean, there's a lot of attention on, you know, I grew up, I was born in Taipei. You know, I grew up in Brazil, but I was born in Taipei. And so to me, the island has, you know, a lot of meaning to me beyond just the fact that we build our chips at TSMC. But it's, look, these are macro level things that we're watching very, very closely. And we've already experienced what happens during COVID when there are significant impacts to the supply chain. And so there are countries and organizations trying to figure out how to mitigate that as we go forward, as you see with the CHIPS Act and building, you know, fabs in other places and things like that, right? And so those take time though, right? Those do take time, and it's not a one-time thing that you got to do. It's something that as a nation we're trying to invest in and making sure that, you know, you mitigate the risks of any one place being an impact. But it's certainly today something that is of a lot of attention to, you know, to many people, both in the, you know, in the tech world and beyond, right? And so so we'll continue to watch that very closely as well.
Yeah, I just want to clarify for our listeners, I didn't mention it, but TSMC is the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And builds, again, all, you know, NVIDIA builds their chips there. We certainly build our chips there. Many, many other players that are in the chip industry manufacture their chips out of TSMC.
So we have come to the final question of this podcast, which has been so knowledgeable and so enjoyable. But Semanova is a growing company. You guys are about to celebrate 6 years, which congratulations. You've been around for 6 years. What is your long-term plan for growth? Do you ever see yourselves being acquired, or are you determined to remain independent?
You know, we're super excited about the trajectory we are on. We think that we can build a significant business, a significant company that powers empowers enterprise class AI. You know, we're seeing, well, today we're already in 15 countries. We deploy our technology in 3 continents, and we see a big need, right? As companies, enterprises, public sector organizations, you know, anybody that has a lot of private data and they want to actually, you know, create their own GPT so they can own the model, which is, the representation of their data. Most people want to own it. They want, if their data, we always say, is your data your model, right? And so you should own the model that's been trained off of your data. And so we're on this mission to actually help everybody be part of this new AI economy, right? We're on this journey to help everybody be able to actually participate and level the playing field so that you can take advantage of this technology and be productive, just like many of the largest companies in the world are starting to actually show show the value of AI. And so so we're excited about that journey, and I think that that puts us on the trajectory to really help build technology last for a long time and hopefully build a company that lasts for a long time.
Okay, well, thank you for that, and thanks for joining us today. And for our listeners, we cover Sambanova. Esther writes about Sambanova. We have a few stories, stories up on our on TechTarget News. And hopefully we'll have you back again next year when you're a $15 billion company. Good luck to you. Thank you for being with us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you to you both. It's been great, and thank you for all the support.